Welcome to Lions Collective here, and you, as you can see, we are two men short for good reason. All right,
where the hell is everybody?
Yeah, you know, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic, 97.1, the Ticket's own Will Birchfield. He is with his wife while she is in labor, so they have reasons to not be here today, but I am here. Jeff from Crunch Time Sports. We have Detroit Football Network's own Justin Rogers. It is a two-man show, and we are going to recap the Steelers game that transpired on Sunday that still has Lions fans pretty upset. And then we'll talk about the Vikings game later on in the show. A lot of things to get to. Justin, how are we doing? This is a two-man box. This is new. We haven't had this.
Look, it's been a rough week covering this team. It's always tough when fan ire is up mixed with the other emotion that I think is tough to deal with, which is apathy. Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to bring you the stories as they come, but like, look, everybody is mentally moving on to the offseason. I think we all recognize the playoffs are, do we even call it a possibility? Possibility seems too strong, right? Like there's a miraculous path to the playoffs, but I think we all recognize what this is. And, we're going to be flipping a page to what's next here, sooner than later.
Yeah, it's I believe per ESPN Analytics, I think it's like 16%.
And that seems optimistic.
Yeah, that even seems like too friendly. I mean, you'd have to, yeah. I've been operating under the assumption that they do not make the playoffs. I think to what you're saying, I think it's better. People want to hear more about how do the Lions fix this. I think that's the biggest probably conversation coming out from the Steelers game, because you had in that game, I mean, Calvin Shepard's going to be tough to take away the big plays in this one. They ran for 230 yards on the Lions. So we'll get to the defense later. But the things that seem to be coming out as of right now, and it's been transpiring pretty much all day, and I see the first comment of the day right in the chat is about the Montgomery stuff, which, again, the Lions ran for 15 yards. I cannot believe I'm even saying that. I don't remember – I would be curious. This is where Colton would be so valuable.
Let's go.
What's the lowest amount of rushing yards they've had in the Dan Campbell era as a team? That's where I'm curious.
Oh, that's it. That's it. I thought you were going to ask me the lowest of the Super Bowl era, because I got you there too.
Oh, wait, what's that? What do we got there?
Negative 18. So I'm kind of scoping this out during the game, right? Like, it was at the point where they had 18 yards. It was before Gibbs lost three on a carry at the start of that final drive. And so I kind of had the stats pulled. Fourth worst of the Super Bowl era total. And then they had a negative 18 rushing game during the Mike Martz coordinating era, which makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
Sean McDonald, former, I believe, slot receiver, had a negative 15-yard carry. I have not looked up what that looked like, but I'm sure it was some kind of goofy end around or reverse where he tried, getting away from the defense, just kept going backwards. And then I think they had four carries the rest of the day for another negative 3 yards. So it apparently can be worse, but, for a team that a March squad, you kind of say, oh, well, I guess I could see how that disaster happens. For a Dan Campbell squad where it's built on the ground game, where it's built around Jahmyr Gibbs and formerly David Montgomery, like that, is just kind of emblematic of where it's been all year. And I believe that brings it to five, possibly six games this season where they finished under 100 yards rushing as a team, starting with week one. I mean, we saw these cracks in week one against the Packers where they had 46 yards, and you're like, oh no, right? Like this is problematic. And look, a lot of those teams are rush four, drop seven teams and are equipped to stop the run, but the Steelers weren't a good run defense coming in. I think they're allowing 4.4 yards per carry.
Yep.
And really the story of this game, and I think we can come back to the run game, but it's you are losing in both trenches. And if you can't win the trench battle in the NFL consistently, you cannot win consistently. You can get by and skate by on some weeks, but week in and week out, no, this is the best you can hope for, is a slightly above average team. And that's certainly not Super Bowl contention.
No, not at all. It's been the theme all year. I mean, Dan's been asked more often than not as of late, just about the identity. And you're spot on. Like, the identity of this football team, I think people, and I brought this up this week, I think when fans, you know, I hear a lot where it's like, oh, the identity on offense for this team is the fourth downs. You know, you're aggressive. You score on fourth down. It's like, no, the identity has always been, we're going to run the ball and you're not going to be able to stop it on third and one, fourth and one, third and two, third and three, fourth and two. Obviously that was with Frank Ragnow. It was a little bit, it was a lot different of an offensive line, but that seems to be the, that seemed to be the theme with Dan Campbell, is we're going to pound the ball. We're going to stop the run. We're going to win up front. And then everything else kind of follows after that. It allows you to go for it on fourth down because you know teams are going to struggle stopping you. And it seems like this year, whether you want to point to the offensive line or not, which is obviously a big factor in all of this, they just, they're getting dominated up front. And obviously the defense, you still have a, you have a healthy front seven, and they're still getting pushed around. So, you know, we'll talk about Calvin and the defense. That's another conversation. But at least for the offense, it has been the case this year where they just don't – I mean, if you look – if you just told someone that's never watched the Lions but they love the NFL, let's just say that's a hypothetical scenario, and you said, watch this offense, what is the identity? And he went through the season and watched every single snap on offense. I think the result of that, the person would say, that identity is that quarterback, 16. He's throwing for 400 yards a game, and that guy's putting the offense on his shoulder, which is the opposite of what you want in an offense. It seems like the offensive identity this year has been Jared Goff. So more kudos to him with the play calling change, the offensive line regressing, not having a consistent run game. And I think that's the exact opposite of what Dan Campbell and their identity should be and what it's always been, which is not a finesse, you know, throw the ball. How many times did Jared throw on Sunday? 50 times?
712.
Yeah. It's like, you said, you're spot on. It seems the Lions have kind of lost their identity, and I, you know, it's something that has probably been the most head scratching part of this entire year, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, the identity was twofold and they kind of rolled into each other, right? It was, well, threefold, right? It was trench play, grit, aggression, right? And aggression starts with good trench play, right? And opens up those opportunities to blitz the quarterback on defense and to have the balls to hand it off on a draw on third and eight, or not even a draw, just like a straight up run, and confident your guy is going to get it. And if he doesn't get it, you're confident he's going to get six and you're going to go for it on fourth down anyway and dare other teams to stop you. And one of the best teams in the NFL on fourth down last year, obviously their best running season, and really kind of a historically great running season between maybe the best tandem in NFL history, at least single season, with Gibbs and Montgomery. And Gibbs remains extremely potent, right? Like any given time he gets the ball in his hands, I know it hasn't worked out that way since the Giants game, but anytime the ball's in his hands, there is a threat to score there. But when you shut him down, the offense shuts down. I mean, really, it's crazy how the offense goes as Jahmyr Gibbs goes. And you mentioned the 15 yards total. Here's a fun stat for you. David Montgomery accounted for 113% of that on one carry in that game.
He had
a 17 yard run in that game. Everything else was negative two. And it's just so concerning. And it does. It started with Frank Ragnow's retirement. And I know and fully believe the Lions were aware of the possibility. It was discussed earnestly and honestly between the two sides that he was weighing his, you know, situation. And I still believe they were caught off guard. I just don't think they anticipated it. I think they thought, you know, his football character, his love of the game, his love of his teammates would ultimately bring him back to the team. And I guess it kind of did there for that strangest 3 days that I've ever covered in the 14 years on this beat. But you lose Frank Ragnow. And I know people are down on Graham Glasgow. And I think part of that is because they're contrasting him to Frank Ragnow, right? You've gone from all pro to average. I mean, at this point of his career, Graham Glasgow is average, but compared next to an all pro, he looks like the worst player in the NFL, right?
Yep.
On top of that, you've got Tate Ratledge, who is a rookie who went through the rookie lumps. I think he's actually come along very nicely as this season's progressed. Still has some ups and downs, but like the trajectory is up on him. Mahogany, I think, was you know, Brad warned us at the league meetings, and interesting that he dialed back our enthusiasm for Mahogany, because Mahogany was so good in those two starts last year. And he's like, look, he has to win a job. He still has a lot to prove, was kind of Brad's message. And then he goes out and Mahogany, that is, has a incredible camp. I thought it was one of the best. Colton and I were talking about this week. He didn't quite see it that way. I'm sure Will did, because that's his guy. But I thought Mahogany, Terron Arnold, J-Mo were the three players that were going to just take this massive jump this year. Mahogany hasn't, breaks his leg. Kudos to him for fighting back. He's clearly playing through pain. He was limping something fierce in the locker room. Decker's shoulder had a setback, not even a setback, a different injury that occurred between week and week two. So suddenly it's just like Sewell and a bunch of guys trying to figure it out, right? Whether it's age or injury or inexperience, and just the domino of Ragnow leaving, you know, just set the whole operation back. And it's so funny, like, they're still averaging 30 points a game. Like, I know some of that is 52 here,
yeah,
13 here, whatever, but end of the day, it's 30 points a game. It's still a pretty potent offense, but I think you've nailed it. Like, right now the identity is Goff. It's Jameson Williams is showing that growth. Amon-Ra is consistent. We finally saw, I think, Tesla take a really important developmental step. Maybe we come back to that a little later. But it's the passing game. Look at the second half against the Steelers. They just said, we can't run the ball. What are we going to do? Goff threw it every single time until one run in that final drive. So every single play the rest of the game was Goff passes. Pittsburgh knew they were going to do it, yet they continued to move the ball. They clawed back in because their quarterback is efficient enough, can read it, can get rid of the ball quickly, has the weapons on the outside to make this thing work. And you can't live like that. You can't live like that going forward. They're going to have to find a way to get the ground game and the trenches back. Not necessarily in this two-game stretch, but in this offseason, that is Brad Holmes' big charge, is finding a way to recharge both trenches.
It's like what Shift God just commented here. Shout out to you. He says, if this Monty stuff isn't concerning already, there's a stat that says when the Lions are under 100 rushing yards, they are 0-5. And when they are over 100 rushing yards, they are 8-1. I mean, you talk about, now it's a heavily Jahmyr Gibbs-dependent offense. I mean, when you look at the wins, you see a lot of 200 rushing yards in a win, you know, over 100 all-purpose yards in a win. But if a team can hold Jahmyr Gibbs, to your point, to that 2.9 a carry, 3.1 a carry, you're probably beating the Lions, because at that point, now you're asking Goff to, you know, attempt 40, 50 passes. And with this offensive line, the way they're pass protecting, it's not good for, let alone any quarterback, but not just Jared Goff. I mean, that's just a recipe for disaster. Even if you have talented wide receivers like they do, it just makes it that much harder. And I think the biggest thing you see too, and Dan mentioned this, is you can get in a rhythm, because and it's what Will tweeted out, the three and outs, the three and four and outs that they have this year. They have so many three and four and outs this year, more than they've ever had. So now you're asking, just to throw a little, you know, try to defend the defense a little bit. You have a defense that even when they get a stop, you have the offense go back out there and they go three and out. So now you're asking the defense to go back out on the field and basically replicate what they just did, even though most of the time lately they haven't been able to do that. They're not playing complimentary football. I mean, that's what they've struggled with doing as well. So, the three and outs, the time of possession thing. I mean, when you're getting run on and you can't run the ball, no duh, you're going to get dominated in time of possession, which leads to, you know, you can't get in a rhythm. And then at some point, Dan Campbell just says, you know what, screw running the ball. And they actually looked better not running the ball, which doesn't make any sense whatsoever, because they're in that, you know, basically a hurry up offense where Jared Goff's just throwing the ball over the field. So, yeah, it's been very odd watching this team this year, because again, it's not what they've been. And David, you know, putting out the mysterious story, you know, he put out the little shoulder pads in the locker room, you know, with some song that, shout out to Corey Woods, like he knew the song. Everyone's breaking down what song he put on there. You know, probably just fans and everyone, I mean, including myself, we're all reading into it, but rightfully so. I mean, David clearly isn't happy with the role he's in. I mean, we can go back to the Rams game. We did our show that Wednesday, and, you know, David in that game averaged 4.6 yards a carry, and they didn't give him the ball. I mean, I mean, he's only, he hasn't gotten double digit carry since the Washington game where he had almost five a carry in that game. So Demont's usage has gone down significantly less. He had the 17 yard gain in that game and they took him out in the red zone and they put him in on third down, which made no sense to me. Like, it's like, usually that's a guy you put in on first, second down, and then Jameer comes in the game. It just, it's been an odd, it's been really odd this year with David. And then he, you know, clearly he's a little upset on social media. The biggest question I have, Justin, is what does his future look like with the Lions? Because he's not making a lot of money. I mean, he's making like what I think would think it's like $7-8 million, which I guess you could argue when you want to pay guys, you might be want to free that.
What are you getting paid over there, man?
You know, well, yeah,
not a lot of money.
Very pitiful. Lions Collective. We're $7 million. Not enough for me, Justin. All right, I'll just say that. And you know, I start to feel like a breakup's coming. I get a feeling, Justin, that a breakup's coming, and he's not. His contract's not even over yet. I think he's got one more year on it. I get that feeling that a breakup.
Oh no, it is. It is worse than that. They signed him to an extension last year that starts next year.
Wow. Okay.
He hasn't even got to his extension yet.
So he's got multiple years on his.
He's got 2 years left. And look at the way that was structured. A lot of the money came up front. There is an off ramp for the team. I think the coaching staff has a lot of reflection to do with the David Montgomery usage this year. And I'm going to, you know, take the big picture here. I'm going to, you know, look at it through all the angles, right? Like, I think everyone can agree Jahmyr Gibbs is the better player, the more dynamic player, the explosive player. You looked at it last year, and what was the argument last year? Even when they were killing it as a tandem, it was like Gibbs needs the ball more. And then right. Gibbs has the games where Montgomery's out and carries it 27 times and has these just epic blow up games. And you're like, I told you, I mean, Gibbs needs to be the guy. He deserves all the carries, which of course the best part about Gibbs and Montgomery is that they take the strain off of each other's bodies by sharing the workload. Right. And so, fresh legs that not only, you know, work for them in their favor in games, but also over the course of the season and realistically over the course of their career, right? It should make them better players for longer. And so when the Lions flipped their roles, and by that, I mean, Montgomery was the starter last year. He was the first back out there. And then, you know, Gibbs would come in second series or third series. When they flipped that this year, we've talked about this. Like, you understood immediately why you wanted more Gibbs. You wanted that workload share to go from 50-50 to 65-35 or 60-40. And you said, okay, that makes sense. A little bit more Gibbs, a little less Montgomery. But by flipping it, you didn't take into account the game flow aspect of it. And particularly this Lions team that has trailed more this season against better opponents, that has had more of those three and outs. And so there's just naturally been fewer opportunities to get Dave Montgomery in the game. Once you fall behind, or once you get into a 2-minute drill, like, Gibbs is your solution because he's just more dynamic in the pass game. And so it's been a game flow aspect. That's why I say it kind of falls on coaching, because it wasn't necessarily thought through on, you know, how this might look if the game goes this way. You could always go to more Gibbs. You can't always go to more Montgomery. And we've seen it over and over and over this year where, you know, he's had these games. I think I looked it up. He's had, might've been going into this one, 102 games, 102 for his career. Now it's 103 and probably can add one to it. But I think 18 of them, he had fewer than 10 carries and 7 of them were this season. And so, like, you say it's not a lot of money. And I understand, like, relatively speaking, NFL contract terms, $8 million, not the biggest seller, but in terms of running backs, top 12. And so I would contend, and I did contend in a column this week, that David Montgomery, in a vacuum, talent level, what he brings to the team, what he can do on a week-to-week basis, they have no problem with him earning top 12 money. Is he top 12 back in the league? No, maybe not. But, like, just based on when he was paid and cap inflation, all this stuff, like, the salary is not out of whack for who he is, what he's done, what he brought to the Lions the last 2 years. But when you do this, when you put him in these situations with these game flows, it is a massive overpay on the organization's part. Nothing that Montgomery's done he is the same dude. You watch him in training camp practices. He moves the same way. He's as physical. We see when he runs, his yards per carry average is at or near a career high. Like, he is fine. He has juice, gas in the tank, whatever, you know, juice in the orange, however you want to say it. Like, the player is not the problem here. It's the usage. And my argument is, I think we're going toward a divorce because it's best for both sides. I think the Lions have to just say, yep, Gibbs is our guy. Doesn't mean he's going to get 30 carries per game, you know, but if you're only going to have 6 to 12 touches, go draft a rookie in the fourth round. Go get your Manungai or whatever, right? That the way that works with Swift, it's not Vaki. I know people will say Vaki. No, that's probably not the answer. You need more of a north-south guy. And then the other part of the equation is, let David Montgomery go. Love him. Let him go because you'll love him. Let him go, spread his wings, and be the guy he can be somewhere else, because he does have that guess. Like, and I can't definitively say that he wouldn't just be content staying here, but I'd be very, very surprised. He said all the right things. He always says all the right things. And I want to be careful reading into social media messages, because they could just mean just about anything. But knowing the competitor that guy is, and any competitor really in losing situations where they feel like they could be doing more to help, let him go. Let him go be the guy somewhere else, or at least be the guy he was last year, where he's a 50-50 guy in some share.
Yeah, he could be a starting running back on a lot of teams. I mean, I bet if you were to trade him, the Chiefs would instantly call. You know, these teams that need running backs would be calling right away, that need a number one running back. So Demont is clearly talented. I think everything you said is on point. I think the thing with what you said about the rookie running back, I think that's got to be the way they go, because at least if you're
cheap,
if you have cheap, and you don't have to worry about, like, with Demont, you feel like you owe, which you should owe him those carries. Like, you need to give him a certain amount of carries a game. And if you don't match that, then you get questions or he feels underutilized. You won't have that problem with a rookie, because he's just here. He's just happy to be here. He's just like, all right, if you give him carries here, you can always go more to Jahmyr Gibbs. I guess the thing that confuses me is why they went away from the drives, like where one player gets a drive. Because like you said, you could always go to Jahmyr late in the game because he can catch the ball out of the backfield. And he can line up at slot, which he's been doing. And Dan Campbell's been done an excellent job with that. But it's like David Montgomery, if anyone knows what it's like running behind a bad offensive line, it's David freaking Montgomery. He did it for 4 years in Chicago and averaged 4 a carry with whoever was blocking in Chicago. So he's more than capable of, because people will bring up the O-line. David Montgomery knows what that's like. He's done it for years. He obviously had careers in Detroit. But it's going to be very interesting. I agree with what you said. You want to save the money probably if you're not going to utilize it. I mean, if you really believe it's Jahmyr Gibbs, it's the Jahmyr Gibbs show. You know, Tom Pelissero, I believe, said the Lions want to extend him. I think that's obvious. They clearly want to keep a guy like that.
Yeah.
It's probably the right way to go, considering that, you know, they're not going to have as much money to work with. It is worth saving the $8 million or $7 million, whatever the case may be.
Let me leave you with this bar. And by the way, I think it's only like $3.5 million they would save, but it doesn't matter. Like, they owe him eight. I think there's four dead money, something about park, whatever. Go let him be who he is somewhere else. The money's already paid, whatever. If you're, especially if he's unhappy, you know, that those conversations will happen in his ex interview with Brad Holmes. They'll get a feel for it. You don't want an unhappy guy in there too, but let me drop this final bar on the topic. The Lions have modeled their running game after who? The New Orleans Saints, right? Like, it was Dan Campbell talking about
Ingram.
So what they paid for was Kamara and Ingram. Yeah. What they're doing now is Kamara and Latavius Murray. Can't pay Latavius Murray Mark Ingram money.
No, you can't.
He is Mark Ingram still, but they're using him like Latavius Murray.
Yeah. It's a great point. Yeah, I mean, a guy like David Montgomery should not be getting 4 carries in a ball game. Like, it just, or, I mean, let alone, it, no matter what the case is. So I agree with you there. I'll tell you what, we'll take a quick break. We'll hear from our friends over at Sleeper. When we get back, we'll talk more Isaac Tesla, because he's arrived. And he's arrived, and you posted an article on Digital Football Network of him kind of talking about the OPI, which It was. We'll get into that when we come back. But first, got to tell you about our friends at Sleeper. We'll see you in 30 seconds.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
All right, let's find. Oh, there we go. The two-man box for the Sleeper read. By the way, use that code HMA when you sign up. You get a $100 deposit matched up to $100, and you can utilize Sleeper picks on Christmas, Lions, Vikings. It's very simple. Depending on what state you're in, you could play along. You can choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players. You could do it from pregame. You could do it during the game. You can do it across different sports. Doesn't even have to be the NFL. You just pick more or less than the predicted stats. Hopefully you haven't been picking more on David Montgomery. You probably have lost some money over the last couple of weeks. But on Sleeper, you can get up to 1,000x payouts. You share with your friends and get rewarded together. You guys know what Sleeper is. It's one of the fastest organically growing fantasy platforms in the world with over 6 million active users. And they're only continuing to grow while earning some of the highest levels of engagement in the industry. Shout out to Sleeper for sponsoring Lions Collective. Now let's talk some Isaac Tesla because he caught.
Hey, maybe they took the under on Montgomery and they're just rolling in bank right now.
Honestly, I fall for this bait. So I'm an active bettor. I'm a degenerate, as some would say, just like Kyle from Dog and Pony. But we text each other about parlays. Kyle, hopefully you haven't taken a single thing I've sent you. But the thing I've been falling for lately, Justin, is the you love this, the 100 yards all purpose from Jahmyr Gibbs. That has been gas consecutive weeks. Maybe I should start putting more respect on an $8 million contract. You know, maybe I should, because based on the rate I'm going, I might need an $8 million contract. Or maybe I don't, actually, because it might all go to betting apps. So, yeah, that's a degenerate speaking. So I'm not betting on Jahmyr Gibbs anymore. But what I will bet on is an Isaac Tesla touchdown, because every time the guy catches a ball, seems to be either near or in the end zone. And he has either a defender, he has to either make a ridiculous catch or he jumps up and makes a ridiculous catch over two defenders, which he did in that Steelers game. He did have that OPI, which was a big controversial call, whatever. And he, you know, and I would love you to speak more on what you kind of found out from Isaac Tesla. But he seems to now be, they trust him. I mean, he has all, and I think that's the biggest surprise this year. And kudos to Brad Holmes. I mean, you found this guy from Arkansas in the SEC, wasn't utilized correctly. You know, he's playing a different role technically, lined up a lot in the slot, even for as big as he is. He's playing a little bit of a different role, but they're still using him to his strengths. And Jared, you know how Jared is. And just like most really good quarterbacks, they have to really trust you as a rookie to throw you the ball. And it seems like Isaac Tesla has earned the full trust of Jared Goff and Dan Campbell. So he's thriving right now, and it's good for the Lions. Although there's a lot of negative, the good is you have a rookie who's going to be very good, a very good player.
Yeah, we should revisit our preseason predictions on yards and catches, because obviously we got a little caught up in the hype post Tim Patrick trade as well. But it's, you know, there's these lessons you learn over time covering a team that sometimes you forget and need a reminder. And, you know, it was always going to take, again, here's another Brad Holmes example of like warning us right after the Patrick trade, like, hey, this guy's a rookie. He's going to go through it a little bit. He's got a lot of growth. And yeah, that was very true, right? Like you mentioned, limited playbook at Arkansas, right? Limited role. He was mostly a slot guy at Arkansas. And so he had to, one, learn how to play outside, how to win the jams, because you don't get jammed as much in the slot. So you have to learn the releases, the steps for the releases. So there's a bunch of technique, which is far more detailed in the first place at the NFL level. Then you have to learn a playbook that conservatively is 4 times bigger than what you had at Arkansas and had multiple years to kind of process at Arkansas. And you're trying to get it all at once, and you're trying to learn slot X, Y, Z receiver. So you're learning 12 times as much information. Now you're learning 3 positions in a 4 times larger playbook, and you're have just more finite details to all the fundamentals. So it was going to take time. It was going to take time, and I'm not crowning him after one game, but what I would say is this was a really, really positive step in the development you wanted to see as the rookie season progressed and got toward the end. And you look at the final results of this game, 7 targets, 4 catches. You brought up the ridiculous touchdown grab. That catch was far more difficult than the one that he couldn't hang on to in the end zone. And Tesla actually said he lost it in the light as it was coming. So now you're catching in between two defenders, getting hammered and can't see it. Like, preposterous. But yet, it's because he has and can make those catches that people are willing to call the one at the end of the game a drop. I would not call it a drop, but I would say I understand and even think it's reasonable to expect him to come down with that because of the bar he set for himself. And he would tell you the same thing. And he has said the same thing. Like, he expects to catch that. That's, you know, was clearly frustration, but I expect to see more games like this one in his second season. I'm not telling you he's going to get 50 yards every game and finish with 850 because there's just not enough balls to go around in the offense, right? Like, Laporta's got to eat, JMO's got to eat, Gibbs has got to eat, St. Brown's got to eat. But could he have 6, 7, 8 50-yard games through the course of the season, have a 100-yard game in there somewhere, a 2-touchdown game in there somewhere? Yes. He's playing 30 to 40 snaps right now. He's getting more comfortable in his blocking assignments. There's still some details that he's kind of ironing out. You saw it the previous week with the miscommunication on the fade route into the end zone late.
Yep.
But he's rounding a corner. I think, and I contend, that this was the most important game for him this year because of the workload, because of the targets, and honestly, the growing moment of the ending that will only serve to fuel him to get better. And I think all that is going to combine to ultimately make a better player.
Yeah, the ending was, you know, in his defense, he was saying how, you know, because they called the OPI on him, made contact with the defender who was chasing out Ross St. Brown. The big controversy was he directed into that defender, or was he just trying to basically set a pick on that defender? If you watch the game and you watch the playback, I think we can, at least in my opinion, I would say it was more so the defender. It is what it is. I don't think it was an intentional thing where Isaac, you know, runs into the guy. But they called it, you know, the touchdown was called back. And, you know, that's something that in people, I've had it already, you know, Detroit versus everybody, referees, you know, and I get it. I understand it. There's calls. No one really brings up how you got down to that position with all the calls that the Steelers had, but which were good calls, by the way. They were all fair calls. Even the Amon-Ra St. Brown OPI at the end, that was technically.
Oh, yeah.
So we can say safely that, you know, there a lot of the calls there at the end were correct. That one, I would say a big controversy with that one. Rex Ryan went off with his Detroit Lions Christmas sweater on Get Up the next morning. It was pretty ticked off about it, which, by the way, I need that sweater. I don't know.
Well, he does have a kid coaching on the staff, so that,
whoever's
that might factor into the bias.
I need the sweater.
let me say this. I thought there were two OPI calls in that game that were questionable. I didn't like the one on Washington either.
Yeah.
I did not think that he veered from his route. I think what you saw was a little man running into a wall and the refs going, oh, that did not look good.
No.
Yeah. But I mean, usually when that flag is thrown on the mesh route like that, the dual crossers, the offending player leans or veers out of his path to kind of get in the way. And I just think Darnell Washington is a big, big man. And I would not have thrown a flag on that one. I thought it was well executed by them. With Tesla, I understand fans' anger. What you learn with these calls, because every team runs them, every team runs pick routes. He was not an intended target in that play. And your job as a receiver is to sell the fact that you are a target on the play.
Yeah.
And
running around.
While he was running his route and he kind of described it, and he said he did exactly what he was wanted or what he was coached to do while he was running straight. I wouldn't say he was driven, but you know, the defender did have a hand on his hip. He did continue to steer him that way, maybe is the best way to say it. But at the very end of that, what did Tesla do? He lowered his shoulder into the chest of the defender. And some people might say, oh, he was bracing for contact. It doesn't matter. Like, it's that action that is dramatic and noticeable that catches the official's eye that draws the flag. And I think, you know, my colleague, Rich Silva over the Detroit News, as we were going down in the elevator after the game, he's like, man, if I'm coaching that, why doesn't the position coach show hands? Like, basically run your slant and then turn toward the quarterback and show your hands while running into the receiver. Like, at least demonstrate, like, whether you are or you are not, like, a progression in the, a read progression, like, pretend you are, right?
Right.
And Tesla had an OPI in the preseason against Atlanta. It was more of the mesh route variety, right? But he leaned, right? Like, he leaned into the guy and just bumped him with the shoulder. And we talked about it because then he had a really good pick on a, I can't remember the game, but he had a pick that set up a touchdown at some point in the regular season. I said, it looked to me like you learned something. And he talked about the coaching points. Now, Scotty Montgomery told him, you know, better things to do and fix. And even though Isaac told me in this case that he was doing exactly what he was coached to do, I would be very, very surprised, given I think Scotty Montgomery is the best assistant coach on the staff. I have an immense amount of respect for the way he does his job, the way he handles his players, the way he attention details. I have to imagine that he's given him and will continue to give him pointers on how to better execute that, to not draw the attention, to not draw the flag, because if you do the little things right, you can avoid that. And so I understand why the official threw the flag. Doesn't mean I necessarily agree with it, but I understand it because of just that really very visual and obvious shoulder thrust. The same thing with the push off and the white sleeves, right? It just makes it so much more obvious than, or when Amon-Ra pushed, guys push off all the time. DK Metcalf pushed off a bunch in that game. I think he got flagged for one, but when you force the defender to throw and flail back his arms because you hit him so hard, you're going to get called.
Mm-hmm. No question. And even, I mean, in the game itself, it takes away from the fact, the ending, I think, for the most part, takes away from the fact of how bad your defense played, how bad they played in that game. I mean,
did it take away from it?
Well, I mean, at least Rex Ryan, and I guess nationally, the hot thing is to talk about the refs. But it's not fun to break down what the defense did wrong. I mean, that's what we do here locally. That's why you should be watching.
That's what I did yesterday.
That's why you should be subscribing to the Detroit Football Network. That's why you should be subscribing to Crunch Time Sports. But I did something very fun. I said, you know what? They ran 27 carries, the Steelers, for 230 yards. It's 8.5 a carry. I said, you know what? Let's take away the longest run from every ball carrier. How many yards?
Don't do it.
I said, and they still ran Justin for 23 for 140. So, I mean, it didn't really help. That's six a carry. So, the run defense, it's just the poor timing of it. Because you were doing the people a favor. We're trying to find out what's going on with this run defense. And you and Will. And Kelvin brings up the, you know, well.
He didn't like it.
Yeah, he didn't like it. He didn't like it against the Vikings when he was asked the same question. And it just so happens in the following game against the Steelers, which, again, we talked about a middle-of-the-pack defense. Well, it's a middle-of-the-pack rushing attack. They ran for 200-plus yards on you, and they did it pretty dominantly. I mean, there was a stretch where Jalen Warren had two carries for 90 yards. I mean, it was just like, bang, touchdown, bang, touchdown. What is going on with this defense? Because you can make the argument injuries have affected the secondary, no doubt. You're missing Brian. Even with Brian, though, they were struggling. But let's just give them the injury bug, okay? Brian, no Kirby. Obviously, that affects that. We'd argue they're the best safety duo in the NFL. You don't have Terron Arnold, and he was starting to really take strides this year. Obviously, that hurts. Meek Robertson has been struggling, and he's banged up. He's got the club on his hand. You got Rock Ya-Sin in the game, and Rock Ya-Sin, he was supposed to be your cornerback four, so he's in a different role. You're missing guys in your secondary, no doubt. You're healthy up front, though. That front seven, and Jack Campbell's been incredible. But it just seems like they can't, it's going back to the identity thing, Justin, they can't stop the run. And the Pittsburgh Steelers don't have I had a guy from Pittsburgh on Crunch Time last week, and he was like, hey, man, our offensive line, you guys talk about the issues you're having. We've been having these issues for years. And he's like, I don't know what we're going to do. Our offensive line's not good. You know, we got all these guys banged up. And they still push the Lions around, essentially. So what's kind of your takeaway just on the defensive performance, but more so – the Calvin Shepard stuff, because a lot of people are fed up at this point. I know there's a crowd that are saying, give him one more year. I would argue, though, Justin, it's hard to be in the business of grooming coordinators when you're in a Super Bowl or bust kind of window. It's hard. And it's not, just unfortunate for a guy like Calvin, because you want him to get another year and grow. But I just don't know if that's the case. The Eagles moved down after 1 year, and look at them. They got two proven coordinators. Where are you at with the defensive performance and then Calvin Shepard's future with the Lions? How much blame is on Calvin Shepard, in your opinion?
A good chunk. You know, I think there was enough carryover in terms of personnel. Not only that, you were better in almost every statistical way a year ago with a defense that was far more ravaged by injury.
Right.
And look, I accept that Branch and Kirby are pretty devastating blows, but so was losing a Lee McNeil and Aiden Hutchinson and Alex Anzalone and, whoever else
Derek Barnes
last year, Derek Barnes, Carlton Davis was out and they allowed 20 point something per, and now they're allowing 24, 25, like, but 4 points is, 20%. Like, it's a lot. They went from top 10 in scoring to, mid 20s. Like, it's a really big drop. And, I look at the Rams game. That was a start. They were allowing 3.9 yards per carry per rush going into the Rams game. And you said, that's something you can hang your hat on. You've built a personnel with, I think, 4 really good defensive tackles, right? Yep. Like, yeah, DJ Reader's long in the tooth, but I think he still does some things really well. Lee McNeil, when healthy and certainly going through inconsistencies with, having a year off and no camp or whatever, but good player. Roy Lopez, I think we can all agree, has exceeded expectations. And you used a first-round pick on Tyleek Williams. Like, that's a hearty rotation. They often play 3 of those guys at once. They play with big physical ends, whether it was Tyler Lacy early in the season or Marcus Davenport now. Like, there's no excuses. And Jack Campbell is the best run-stopping linebacker in the NFL. Among them, but certainly statistically in terms of tackles in the run game, like he's a monster. Alex Anzalone is still good. Derek Barnes is good. All these pieces individually are really good, and they're all healthy, as you mentioned. Marcus Davenport's mostly healthy.
He had moments.
He's playing through some shit for sure. Like, his shoulder's not right. He's trying. But with that talent that you've invested in, with their track records individually, There's no excuses. And the Rams were the most efficient run team in the NFL. And so for them to have success the way they did wasn't shocking. I know they had a couple big ones, but it was more the agony of the 6 yards, 6 yards, 6 yards. Like, you want that to be 6 yards, 2 yard, 1 yard, 6 yard, right? Like, you concede that they're going to get you sometimes, but like, they lived in 2nd and 4 and 2nd and 5 and 2nd and 3 in that game. This one, Jaylen Warren coming to this game, averaging 4 yards a carry, and Gainwell was pretty good. Gainwell is more like Montgomery, right? Like, the change of pace, that's actually pretty damn effective. They were missing their left tackle. They were actually to their third string left tackle, who was making his second start in his 3 years in the NFL in Cook. You had a backup guard in because their starting guard got hurt, and that was their backup offensive tackle who had missed a week and a half practice due to concussion sliding inside. So you're like, you are a patchwork offensive line. The Lions should dominate this matchup. And it starts with, they got physically dominated at the point of attack. You know, the very first run, the guard, the right guard, I don't know the name off the top of my head, but like, literally picks up and moves DJ Reader to where he wants him to be and locks him out. And it's like, oh my gosh. Like, that's a mauling move. And it's like, this is the tone you're going to set. And then I watched these last two games. And I've said this many, many times over the years, but like, when you see great tight end blocking, which really takes a run game to the other level, you go, Lions tight ends don't block this way.
No,
they don't. And Sam Laporta was really impressive this season. I thought he took a massive step forward. I would say he was executing his assignments at a higher level than before. He had a lot of springing blocks, but Brock Wright's never been that guy for me. And I don't like you know, throwing the guy into the bus. He's a super nice guy. The Lions love him. He can do so many things in the offense on special teams. Like, I understand why they value him in terms of trust, but like strictly his run blocking, which I would argue is his primary function in the offense. He's never been consistent like these tight ends we've seen the last 2 weeks. And now you're down to Shane Zylstra, former college receiver, not a run blocker. God bless him. He tries and, you know, does execute on occasion. Giovanni Ricci, who Lions fans might still not know he's on the roster, and he's not. He's on the practice squad, I think. Anthony Firsker, another, you know, more pass catching first guy. Who had a couple nice reception in this game. But like, you don't have the horses on the perimeter to block like these guys. And so like, it's the same thing when I watch zone defense from opponents. Like, I'm just like, man, it's so beautiful watching a good zone defense. I don't know what a good zone defense is, 'cause I've never seen it here. And then you go out and you play the Steelers and your game plan involves 80% zone. And maybe they saw something in Aaron Rodgers' tape that he was struggling with it. You know, I don't know. I'm sure. I mean, you don't game plan something for no reason, but you don't play zone well. And quite frankly, you don't play man well right now. And your pass rush is not fast enough to cover up your deficiencies. And so the defense is just a mess. It's just a mess right now. It's now been a mess for five games. I don't know. He's probably writing something about it. Tim Twentyman, team reporter, showed me a little graphic he pulled up today. First 12 games. I think it was 12. How many have they played? 15. First 10 games. First 10 games. All these important stats, right? Yards, points, red zone, third downs, top 10 in the league. They're now mid to low 20s in all of them. Not for the last five games, for the season. So they've been so bad the last five games that it's negated all this good stuff they were doing for the first 10 games. And, you know, it's execution, it's getting overpowered. And probably to some degree, the league has kind of got a book on Shepard now and some of the things that he likes to do, and they've adjusted to him, and that's the game of football, right? Like, they adjust to you, you adjust to them, they adjust to you. And the adjustment back hasn't been there yet. I believe he can do it. Even though he hasn't, I think this is just a case of a young coordinator still kind of figuring it out. I think that the Lions were too conservative with retaining their schemes on both offense and defense this offseason, and it led to maybe some questionable schematic decisions and arguably a questionable hire with John Morton. But I am not of the opinion of firing Shepard. I mean, I just think that's premature. I understand your point. I think it's a really good one that this is a winner and you don't want to be grooming, you know, a young coach to do it. But I think there was enough positives in those first 10 weeks that you don't excuse these 5 weeks, but you give him the offseason to really dive deep and evaluate himself, evaluate his players, evaluate his scheme, and adjust and learn better how to adjust.
And Brad's, I mean, in all transparency, Brad's got to help him out a little bit. I mean, we're still asking for answers to certain things that we've probably tried to ask questions for years about. But, you know, I'll ask you just to kind of close this off. So you think the Lions, just prediction, just to kind of get your thoughts, next season, game one of next season.
Mock draft? I'm not ready.
Actually, we're not too far away. I'm already getting asked about
I'm not
it.
Ready.
Covering the freaking draft. What are the deepest position groups in the draft this year? Guys, we got plenty of time for that. Week one of next season. New offensive coordinator, or you think Dan Campbell continues to call plays? Just a feeling you're getting now. We don't know. I have a for sure answer. Do you think they bring in a guy outside to call plays? Because I think there's a chance they might keep John Morton on the staff. They might just bring
him. I would think so.
Because he's done a great job just on in a background kind of spot, helping prepare and game plan.
I still think the most likely solution, fans aren't going to like it, but I still think the most likely answer is the offensive staff stays relatively the same. Campbell calling plays, Morton helping with the organizational aspects throughout the week, maybe chipping in some play call ideas as the game progresses. The bigger adjustments, I think, will happen behind the scenes. I'm going to be really curious because it's tough to kind of answer when you're living in it. And, yeah, you know, I know we've asked him a couple times, and just you're in the moment. It's tough to process big picture. I always look forward to the owners meetings, and those are late March, early April, when we get a chance to kind of sit down with Campbell for 30, 40 minutes with just kind of the core beat writers. You strip out some of the TV people or radio people that are asking more soundbitey questions. You can really kind of dig into some topics, right? I want to hear kind of his reflections of how he needs to adjust to the game flow, the game situations, because that was the hardest part, I think, or the most inconsistent part, is when you take over play calling midseason, kind of several people's responsibilities have to adjust and adapt, and they weren't necessarily prepared for that, and they're doing the best they can, but, you know, we've seen some maybe clock management stuff slip. I don't know what kind of role Campbell maybe had in defense and maybe put it all on Shepard's plate. And maybe that's why we've seen a little bit of a dial back there. I think they're going to have some a reassessment of delegation and maybe an additional staff member or a tweak to the staff somewhere that helps with just kind of the finite detail of game management that maybe allows Campbell to focus and concentrate and worry a little bit more about the play calling aspect and not be, you know, living in two worlds. I think that's probably the more likely adjustment. Could they add a coordinator? Sure. I'm sure he's going to explore the options. I don't have any great names for you. I'd still have been fascinated by the idea of Mike Kafka if he, you know, becomes available, just because of schematically the way the Giants ran that game, but also kind of maybe the bigger body of work with the commitment to the run game and the downfield passing. Like, I like that, but who knows? He might end up getting the Giants job. We'll see, but I'm still going to look for guys that philosophically overlap with Dan Campbell, guys that want to win in the trenches, guys that want to run the ball, guys that want to be aggressive. And ultimately, I don't know, I think back to like group projects in college. I trusted myself to do the work more than I trusted anybody else. And I have to think that Campbell kind of feels that way right now after conceding control of the offense to somebody that he really likes. And he targeted John Morton for that position years before he actually hired him. And to see like it not executed the way he wanted, he trusts himself more than anybody else. And I think that's why he'll keep it ultimately.
Now, the next two games, you have the Vikings this week on Christmas, and then you have the Bears in Chicago. So you have a rematch of the Vikings, and then you have the Ben Johnson, you're in Chicago. So that's going to that story will write itself, even if the Lions don't make the playoffs. That'll be a good one. What are some things that you want to see, at least to feel, again, like take away the playoff stuff, even though there's still a slither of hope, but just in a bigger picture sense, like for me, and I think Dan nailed it. I think the best thing for fans right now is you want to see this team just put together four quarters of complimentary football. I think that's the least you can do. And like, and even if they end up losing the game for whatever reason, you just want to see them play better football entirely. Whether that's, you know, being better at stopping the run or being better at running the football. I think they take care of the Vikings this week. I think Max Brosmer gets the start. So I say right. That hopefully this doesn't get clipped. I would assume they win that football game. But even if you lose to Chicago, just look competent. I think that's, for me, what I want to see the next two games, a better operation entirely. And I think you can at least go into the offseason being like, okay, at least they tried and you're left off on a better note than you have the last five games.
Yeah, I just texted Mustafa. He's going to clip it for sure.
Okay. Incoming Max Brosmer. Yeah. 250
trash talk.
Yards. Yeah.
Yeah. I am of the belief, and it's small, I know there's plenty of people that are anti-momentum, but I do think that there's something to be said about closing the season strong, building some confidence, particularly with the guys that'll be back. Yeah. And I asked Dan a question, and I knew how he was going to answer today, but I just wanted to put it out there. I said, do you use these opportunities? I said, I understand you're alive and you're going to fight tooth and nail to win these games and keep your playoff hopes alive as long as possible. But is there value in getting young guys, forcing young guys out there to get the reps, get the experience, get the taste that they can build on? And his answer was, no, we're going to run with the guys we have, that we, you know, pretty much have already, but still there are young guys that are playing, you know, obviously Tate Ratledge, Tesla, which we talked about, Tyleek Williams is seeing plenty of work. Christian Mahogany, although he like I said, he's fighting through it. And a new one to the mix in Kingsley Aguakin, right? Yeah. Like I thought Kingsley played pretty well, you know, not perfect, but pretty well, despite the run game struggles. And to get him out there against a Brian Flores defense, which will test you mentally as much as it would physical, is going to be really good to understand the evaluation of that player going forward. I don't know if that means he's going to be in the mix to start next year. I don't know if that's the solution you want to fix the center position, or if nothing else, to be a top backup on this squad, like a realistic top backup. I want to see those guys play and play well and close out their rookie year strong, because not all of them are rookies, but you know what I'm getting at. Like, it's a really tough time of year for a first year player. People don't understand how long they've been going. They go right off of their final college season, right into this really physical grind of draft prep, right into an NFL season, which is longer than any college season they had. And I talked to Tate Ratledge today for a while, you know, just trying to start getting ahead of some offseason content and just checking in on where he was at mentally, physically, how he thought his rookie season had gone, where he'd improved, you know, what is he going to do this offseason? And I always appreciate when players are self-reflective and honest, you know, and vulnerable in a way, right? And Tate Ratledge is a guy, and offensive linemen are guys that like maybe aren't always vulnerable, right? They've got to present toughness. And Tate said, look, he didn't use the word, I used the word afterward, but it's what he was describing. He hit a rookie wall, like hard. And I said, when? And he goes, after Philadelphia. And if you remember, that was a game where he got pretty wrecked.
Yeah.
And he's like, look, I've never played football this continuously this long. And I found myself starting to look at the schedule and going, how many games do we have left? Oh my God. Like, my body is hurting. I'm tired. And he said, the veterans really picked him up and they just said, you can't do that. You can't look at what's left. And he said, they've really trained me to focus on today and this opponent. And he said, I pulled myself out of it. Like somebody pulling themselves out of a funk or a depression, right? Like, he pulled himself out of it and he said, I'm doing great now. But like, I had to work through that wall. And I said, how much are you looking forward to the offseason? Whether it's, you know, you do make the playoffs or you don't. And he goes, yeah. He goes, even at Georgia, we would play into the playoffs. And he goes, then you'd get a week and a half off. And then it was straight into spring conditioning. He goes, I've never had time off for years. And he goes, I'm rehabbing because I had an injury or something. He goes, I am really, really looking forward to just kind of resting. He's getting married this offseason. Like, I want to see these rookies fight through that rookie wall, show what they've learned all season, finish strong, go into the offseason, enjoy that first offseason. They'll tell you all the time, it's the best. It's the best offseason is that first one, because you get that break that you haven't had, and then just come back to it in April, hit the weights hard, hit the training hard, March, April, whatever, and make that second year jump, right? That's the big jump for players, is that second year jump. The Lions have an opportunity to get better in several areas because they got young guys that can make that jump. And so I don't really care about the results now, you know, the wins, the losses, whatever. I look at this season as done.
I'm with you.
And you know, I just want to see these guys that are coming back finish strong and build on that going into next season.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm over the wins and loss, but you know, we're not even gonna do, I'm done with this predicting scores. We're done with that. All right, I don't want to do that today. All right, I'm not doing it.
Well, we got to pick something for Kyle.
I will tell you this: the Lions are gonna win this game. I think they're favored by, last time I checked, it might have changed with Max Prosner. No, again, I'm disrespecting him again. That's
do twice. It.
That's twice now I've disrespected Max Prosner.
We're gonna clip both of those together.
He is a very fine undrafted free agent quarterback, but I'm gonna take the Lions in this one. I think they're gonna win this game. I think they're pissed off, and we've seen them pissed off on those back to back. But I think this is a game that it's gonna be hard for me to believe they lose. I'm sorry. I have them at 9-8. I have them losing this, winning this, losing the next week. I'll take the Lions in this one. They split with the Vikings, and I think the Vikings offense, I don't see them getting past 17 points with Max Prosner. I'm sorry. So I'll go 27-17. I'll take the Lions. They win this by 10.
I like that score a lot. I think the big thing you're going to notice in this game is they're going to clean up the pass protection that allowed for 11 hits and 5 sacks last time and cost John Morton his play calling because he did not adjust and pissed off some players in that locker room, you know, off the record. They wouldn't, you know, nobody wanted to go in the record and throw their coach under the bus, but some of those guys were pissed off with the way that they did not make halftime adjustments in that one or make adjustments quickly enough. I think Dan Campbell is going to clean that up this week. I don't think you're going to see Gibbs giving up 3 sacks in this one. Expect they'll run the ball a little bit better, but maybe not much more than 100 yards, but it's really, really tough to buy a Brosmer team. 0 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. There's UDFA.
There's 3 disrespectful comments from us.
Now. Yeah, right, we'll get to SpongeBob 2 minutes later.
yeah,
but, yeah. Give me 30-20.
There you go. Brought to you by Kyle, our good friend over at Dog and Pony Show Brewing, which you guys can, of course, always go.
I'm running out.
I got 1 beer left, so I gotta.
I know.
Talk to Kyle.
He keeps telling me to come in. I just don't have the time. I'm so sorry.
Drink. That's an off-season goal. Is we're going to Dog and Pony Show Brewing. We're getting some beers. So let's definitely do that.
Figure out the food truck schedule.
We'll be back next week with a full cast. As of right now, the injury report gets a little shaky. We'll see how it develops. But as of right now, Will Birchfield expected a full go. And Colton Pouncey expected a full go. But we'll see. Until next week, appreciate you all. Hit the like button and subscribe. And we will catch you next week. Peace.